This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome into Sports Daily on a Thursday. Hope you're having a great start to your morning. I'm Tommy Gester. Jacob Albrock is out today. Max Power is producing the program here for us. The KFH hotline will be open the majority of the morning. You can give us a call anytime at 869-1240 if you'd like to chime in and join the program here this morning. You can also leave your comments on our video stream. We're streaming live on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, also simulcasting on the 12 News Connected app as well. You can leave your comments there. We'll get to them as the show goes on. On top of that, you can also leave us your voice messages on the free Odyssey app. All you have to do is download that Odyssey app, listen to KFH Radio on the app, click the little microphone button, and just like that, you can leave us. It's basically a voicemail. We can play it back here on the program as we move forward this morning. A lot to get to on the show today. Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, our K-State insider, will join us in the next hour to talk a little K-State, including the big news of P.J. Haggerty joining the Wildcats, and that's a big get for Kansas State basketball. We'll get Fitz's take on that. Also, a lot to get to as far as college football is concerned and the CFP and seeding and all of that. We always love to get Fitz's take on that, and so we'll talk to him about that in the next hour of the program. The Royals salvage the series against the Reds. They get the win last night, another stellar outing from Noah Cameron on the bump last night. He's been doing something that no other pitcher has done since like the late 1800s. We'll talk about that and also some news about a new ballpark for the Royals as well that came down late yesterday. And we've got our first team in the NBA Finals. The Oklahoma City Thunder cruise past the Minnesota Timberwolves last night, and they go to the finals. They win that series 4-1 after beating the T-Wolves by 30 points. That and a bunch more that we'll get to on the program today. Max Power, good morning, my friend. How are you?
Oh, Brandon, wherever you are, wake up.
Yeah, so a little backstory, a little inside baseball here with us. So
he's sad that the Timberwolves lost.
I think that might actually be it. Jacob Albrock is out today. Brandon Zinner, our buddy from 12 News, was scheduled to join us this morning. We don't have him here this morning, so it's myself, it's Max, and hopefully as the show goes on, we'll be able to have Brandon join us here on the program today. You might be right, though, Max, because he is a diehard T-Wolves fan. He's a Minnesota sports fan, Brandon is, so he's probably heartbroken. He probably cried himself to sleep last night. It's crazy because I had this thought that the T-Wolves might actually put up a little bit more of a fight last night. Nah. Like, I thought they might. I mean, I didn't think they would win the series, but I didn't think they would roll over in the way that they did.
They were beaten into submission. Their heart was pulled out.
Yeah, it was not good for the T-Wolves. I think at one point
when you get beat at home like that.
Oh, by 30 points. Yeah. I mean, they were done. And Anthony Edwards, I mean, I would have thought that, you know, he could have maybe carried that team a little bit more last night than what he did. You know, there was a point where I think at halftime they had one of the, like, the in all-time history in the playoffs, the like one of the fewest field goal percentages or like made field goals at halftime of any team that's been in the playoffs. Like, it just, they couldn't make a shot.
They couldn't score.
Even lower than the Atlanta Hawks in 86?
I mean, it was up there. It was not good for the T-Wolves at all. They couldn't get anything done. And you know, that's the hallmark, the trademark of the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are smothering defensively. That's what they did to close out the series against Denver in the semifinals. That's what they did last night against the T-Wolves. And they showed why they are, I think, the best team in the NBA. It looks like the Pacers are going to be able to move on and represent the East in the NBA Finals. But I'll say it again. I'll double down on this, Max. I don't care if it's the Pacers or the Knicks. The Thunder, they're better than both of those teams.
They have home. They have home.
I mean, they're better than both of those teams.
The Knicks shouldn't be there.
But, and you know, the Pacers have flexed a little bit on the Knicks, and the Pacers can close out their series and move on. I just think that it's not going to matter. I think the Thunder is just, they're too good.
And the Pacers were in the Eastern Finals last year, so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the first time that the Thunder have been in the finals since 2012. I mean, you got to go back all the way to, you know, the Durant and Harden and Westbrook year that the Thunder made it to the finals. But I mean, look, they have done it with their defense. They've done it with their athleticism. They've done it with their size and their length. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, gets a lot of crap about how he's a free throw machine, and that's all he does is get to the line. I didn't feel like really get to the line a ton last night. He didn't have to. You know, the Thunder, they were able to get it done without that.
Do they go inside? I didn't think anybody goes inside anymore.
Yeah, I mean it's a different kind of play, and really they prioritize their defense. They prioritize, you know, shutting down the other team and making it super difficult for their opponent to get to the bucket, and that's what they did basically throughout the entire series. I guess the reason why I thought, Max, that the T-Wolves would maybe put up a little bit more of a fight is because Minnesota was able to get a game, and they looked pretty good in game three. Like, they looked pretty good against the Thunder. And then it was a very, very tight margin in game four. I thought, okay, like, yeah, the Thunder still are probably going to win this thing, but I felt like at least Minnesota had built up a little bit of momentum to, I guess, at the very least, put up some kind of fight. But they didn't.
No.
They didn't at all. I just don't know how you can go out like that. I don't know how you can go out by losing by 30, you know, in a game when your back's up against the wall. And look, I know that they were overmatched.
They broke their will.
They did. And I think that this just, again, it just shows me that, you know, the Thunder, they're going to be rolling into the finals with a ton of momentum. It's not going to be easy for them. And I think we're all assuming that the Pacers are going to be able to get it done. The Pacers are going to probably represent the East. I can't imagine the Knicks are going to be able to win three in a row to come back. So more than likely, we are on a collision course to an OKC Indiana Pacers NBA Finals. And it's not going to be easy by any means. I mean, the Pacers are good. Tyrese Halliburton has shown, you know, this series against the Knicks that, you know, he is one of the best players in the NBA. He's shown that.
He's shown he can deliver.
He's shown he can deliver in clutch moments and all of that. When the Knicks had been the clutch team in the playoffs up to this point, it's been Halliburton and the Pacers have been able to get it done. So it's not going to be easy by any means for the Thunder. I don't think they're going to cruise in the NBA Finals by any means, but I do think that based off of what we saw, and remember, the Thunder struggled a little bit, against the Nuggets at one point during the course of the semifinals. And at the end of the day, like, they got back on track and they took it to the T-Wolves last night. A 30-point win for Oklahoma City as they move on to the NBA Finals. We'll see if the Pacers can close things out. You know, one other thing that the Pacers have is that they've got a really experienced coach in Rick Carlisle. So even though it's not going to be, you know, it's going to be a daunting task for Indiana, they've got a coach that can definitely game plan for what the Thunder want to do to them. So it's going to be an interesting series, presuming that the Pacers are going to be able to close it out against the Knicks. We are just getting started here this morning on Sports Daily. A lot to get to. We'll dive into the Royals salvaging that series last night against the Reds. We'll talk about that and the prospects of maybe a new ballpark and some details and news on what happened yesterday in that whole saga as it continues. We're just underway here on a Thursday morning at Sports Daily. I'm Tommy Caster, Max Power, producing the program. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily here on KFH. Tommy Caster, Max Power producing the program. Just for a few moments here, at least, we've got our buddy Jacob Albrecht joining us from, it looks like, a beautiful hotel room. Jacob, good morning.
Yeah, I was. It was interesting trying to find like a background on the fly here, but we got.
Is that a Motel right 6? Are you in like a where?
No.
Super 8.
A beautiful.
It's a presidential suite.
Mid-tier. Okay. Mid-tier. Just had a little continental breakfast. So we're ready to rock and roll here before.
With fluffy before pancakes.
Yeah. Did you? Are you using the waffle maker down there in the continental breakfast?
Yeah, hang on. I'll show you here what you get.
Oh boy!
All right.
Oh boy, I cannot wait. Continental breakfasts are a little. Oh my gosh!
Oh, we're shaped like Texas.
Yeah.
Don't ride in a convertible.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't usually get these, but it said like vanilla batter, and I thought that sounded pretty good. So
that is a massive waffle, by the way. That's one of the larger. It's bigger than your head.
Yeah, and my head's big.
Yeah,
I won't eat all this. Don't worry. I made an egg sandwich too. It's good. I like this hotel.
Holy cow! Well, we appreciate you jumping in for a few minutes here, Jacob. We talked NBA Finals last night. The Thunder punching their ticket. The T-Wolves just kind of rolled over and couldn't get anything done last night against the Thunder. We actually think, by the way, and this was a little bit of a speculation from Max in the first segment, that the reason that Brandon is not here this morning is because he cried himself to sleep last night with the T-Wolves rolling over last night. So the Thunder make their way into the NBA Finals. But let's talk a little Royals while we've got you. The Royals are able to salvage the series against the Reds at home. It was another stellar outing from Noah Cameron, who is pitching unlike anybody we've ever seen as far as through his first four starts of an MLB career. Like, nobody's done what he's done. You have to go back to like the late 1800s to see another pitcher that is able to produce through his first four MLB starts the way that Noah Cameron has. And the Royals have absolutely needed him as they were able to salvage the finale of that three-game set.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure. It's like a lighter version of Cole. Well, maybe lighter is not the right word. It's an earlier version, I think, of what the Royals saw with Cole Reagans. You know, they make that trade, they get him over, and he is far better than anyone could have anticipated, even the Rangers. Now you've got Noah Cameron get a call up. And look, I think even the most optimistic scouts or executives or whoever wouldn't have seen this coming. And this isn't sustainable. He's not going to do this forever. He was a little bit more hittable, but he's showing, I think, he's got way more savvy than most guys that get called up. I think there's no question he's got to stay in the rotation right now. And if that's at the expense of Michael Lorenzen, who's struggled a little bit lately, that's fine. Or, as we talked about either yesterday or in the last couple of days, maybe they just go to a six-man rotation because you've got at minimum a hobbled Lugo and Reagans. I kind of like the idea of just leaving him up there and going a six-man rotation, honestly. But if not, you've got Lorenzen, who's been an effective bullpen guy too. By the way, the bullpen is a little bit shaky right now. Ursig didn't appear last night, which was the right play, I think, from Cotraro. Ursig's been rocky, the rockiest we've ever seen him in a Royals uniform. And so he lets Estevez, the old grizzled vet, get in there and do something he hasn't done in, what, more than a year, it feels like. So I think Cameron has become this really interesting story that's not going to be allowed to just be a call up or a fill in. I think at this point, he has to stick. How they do it, I think they've got lots of good options, but there's no world where you can send him down. No chance that he is not he's either a part of the rotation or he's a trade piece. One of the two. Like, he's got to be, he can't be in AAA anymore.
Yeah. I mean, every time he's going out there and, you know, just being masterful on the mound, it makes it that much more difficult for the Royals to send him back down once their rotation gets back to full strength. It does look like, by the way, that Seth Lugo will be rejoining the rotation this weekend. In fact, I believe Friday is when he is set to, you know, rejoin that rotation. Not sure about Cole Reagans, but at least they'll get one piece back. And so until Reagans is ready to go, they don't have to necessarily worry about what they're going to do with Cameron. The stat that everybody has been talking about, Major League Baseball posted this last night after the Cameron outing. He's the second pitcher, only the second pitcher since the year 1893 that has 6 1/3 plus innings pitched and one run or less in his first four major league starts. Think of all of the pitchers throughout history, all of the Hall of Famers, all of the Cy Young winners. I mean, guys like Nolan Ryan and Sandy Koufax and, you know, Randy Johnson and Greg Maddux and Pedro Martinez, all of the greats. None of them have done what Noah Cameron has done through his first major league starts. And yeah, I think you're spot on to try to temper things a little bit. Like, look, it's not always going to be this way. He's going to come back down to earth eventually. But for right now, kind of riding that wave, riding the success, and appreciating that what he's doing at this point is unprecedented.
Yeah, and it's not that it's, I mean, he's not going to maintain this pace, but what pace does he maintain, right? Is this a guy that nobody was counting on that can all of a sudden be a number two, number three type starter in the major leagues for a while? I mean, you think about that. And the Royals have a lot of things to think about organizationally right now. Jack Caglione, we've talked about. Can't call him up too early and sacrifice a year of service time, no matter how badly you need him and no matter how ready he is. You have to protect that future. But there is very much a future that if Cameron is for real, that could start with Cole Reagans and Noah Cameron and Bobby Witt Jr. and Jack Caglione. And that's that kind of thing is really important, I think, to think about if you're the Royals now. Like, now you have to start to think about the development of Cameron. I cannot imagine there is a world where, and I think that they want to be aggressive at this trade deadline, where they would consider something like trading him, but it's at least an option for them if they get to that point, right? And it wouldn't be for anything that wasn't controllable or anything like that. So, I mean, it is a gift from the baseball gods to have a young guy come up unexpectedly like this and do what he's doing. And the thing is, like, when we watch him start, like, none of it seems fake, right? Obviously, he's not going to go 6 1/3 and not give up any runs every game. Like, that's not going to happen. But even last night when, I don't know, was last night his least, like, overwhelmingly impressive? Probably. He gave up 6 hits in 6 innings. Like, wasn't it 6 hits? I don't have my stuff in front of me because I'm on the phone right now. Like, that's fine. Like, you're living with that all day long. Do some of those hits turn into runs over time? Sure they do, but I mean, it's been wild to watch it, and you know, four starts, five, like, this is significant. Like, it's very significant, not just to this season, probably less so to this season, honestly, but to the big picture for the Royals. I mean, it's awesome.
I think as of right now, I mean, you mentioned Cameron as a future foundational piece for this franchise alongside Reagans on the pitching side and Bobby Witt Jr., Jack Caglione on the offense, laying that foundation long term. I'm going to put you on the hot seat for a second. I'm going to put you in JJ Piccolo's chair. And we talked about this particular trade multiple times when the Rangers traded with the Royals and the Royals traded away Aroldis Chapman and they got Cole Reagans in return, and that Reagans, you know, piece of it, the success that he's had with the franchise. I think obviously long term, the Royals won that trade. However, the Rangers got a key bullpen piece to win a championship. The Royals now and JJ Piccolo could potentially be in a similar type situation with Noah Cameron, where they want to win a championship. And they may feel like they've got the majority of the pieces to be able to make a push and to at least get into the playoffs and make a run. If you're J.J. Piccolo, do you entertain the option of potentially using Noah Cameron as a trade piece to go all in potentially for some kind of middle of the lineup outfield bat to be able to potentially win a championship?
I always entertain everything. Nobody is untouchable, truly. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. is untouchable, but nobody's untouchable. Like, I'd entertain anything. I will say this, and Reagan's is all I can think about when I look at Noah Cameron, kind of a quadruple A pitcher that's been blocked a little bit, that's just waiting. And I don't know if Noah Cameron comes up and has the ceiling of a Cole Reagan's, but he certainly has the floor. I would, if it brought me a piece that I can control, sure I would. I think, though, that the Royals are not nearly as desperate as the Rangers were in that season. The Rangers had never won a championship. They had been close. They'd had their hearts shattered several times. It felt like they were right there. They hadn't seen Cole Reagan's, even in a sample size like the Royals have been able to see Cameron. I don't know if the Rangers would do that trade again. They would in the moment because it won them a World Series. They wouldn't have won a World Series without Aroldis Chapman, and he wasn't even that good when he got there. But they had to have him. So it would take more than Aroldis Chapman. Let me say that, if it was for Noah Cameron. But I doubt it. I mean, I doubt it. It would have to be another foundational piece and somebody that could help you. And I just don't think that player is going to be out there. I don't think there's going to be a player like that available. I mean, they're not trading him for a high leverage reliever. That's not going to happen, which is what they, you know, what's essentially what they traded Reagan's for. That was good fortune. So probably there's no chance they trade him. I can't even think of the example of the player. We talked about some of those Orioles outfielders. Wouldn't be Cedric Mullins because he's not controllable. But let's say it's Couser, or let's say it's Kerstad, or you know, one of these younger guys that they have, that they're plentiful with. Yeah, at that point, maybe I would think about something like that. Yes, but the reality is they don't have the starting pitching they have this year, next year, or the year after that. So now you're going to have to think about, okay, how do we start this? And I'm just telling you, like, if you can, for the next 5 years, if Cameron is for real, and you can start it with Reagan's, Bubich, Cameron, that's a good place to start for a small market baseball team. And then you can start it with Bobby Witt Jr. and Jack Caglione and whatever's left of Salvador Perez and a couple more years of any, like, they're okay. Like, they're looking good long term, and they're going to have to make some sacrifices in the short term this year and hope they can hang around to be able to maintain some of this. And I think that they will. I mean, I don't think they're trading Noah Cameron.
I will never forget. We're coming up on a year, and we had J.J. Piccolo on this program almost a year ago. I'll never forget having him on our program. And I remember specifically him talking about trying to balance the current needs of the team versus building a foundation for long-term future success for the franchise, and how you have to kind of balance both. And I think that, you know, a year later, that is absolutely the focal point. It's got to be the focal point for J.J. Piccolo. I think that if he felt like the window was fastly closing, quickly closing, sure, for the Royals, then yeah, you try to go broke right now. You try to go all in for right now. But then if you look at the foundational pieces, I think everything, all the signs point to, there's potentially some staying power with this team in the short term. And I know they've got Bobby Witt Jr. locked up long term. So as long as you've got him on your roster, you probably have a fighting chance. It's not unlike Patrick Mahomes with the Chiefs. As long as you've got Bobby Witt Jr. on your roster, you should be in the mix in some way, shape, or form. But you can't count on that. I mean, look at Mike Trout and the Angels, right? Like, they've had him for years, and just his presence by himself hasn't always, you know, turned into anything. So I think that while they've got a great foundational core in the long term, that window is not closing anytime soon with the pitching that they've got, with Lugo, with Reagan's. If they can keep Cameron, you know, I don't think they'll dangle him. I don't think that they will utilize him as trade bait, just because I think J.J. Piccolo has got to recognize, and I'm sure he does, that, hey, this is not a one-and-done type thing. This is not a flash in the pan. our window should remain pretty well open for years to come.
It will probably. And the thing is too, like they have shown us they will spend money, like historically. That this ownership group spent a lot of money to put this group out there. So don't ever take that for granted. Like there are small market teams that do not do that. Now, what are the motivations? Are they trying to get everybody fired up so they can build a new stadium? I think that's a part of it, but I don't think that's all of it. I think John Sherman is, he wants to win more maybe than prior ownership, or he's willing to, you know, to put his dollars behind that. And I think like baseball is different than everything else when you're a small market team, because you just don't look at what the Royals have struggled with and faced forever. Look at the long struggling teams across baseball and what they face forever. Like if you don't get it right in the hardest draft process in any sport, if you don't get that right, you're not going to have a chance. And even if you do get it right, you only get a small window of it. So all of that being said, no, I don't think you trade a piece like Cameron if you project him. Now, they still have to trust their scouting, though. Like, if they think this is any sort of flash in the pan, if they think this isn't sustainable, then, yeah, you go make a trade. You know, you take advantage of that. I don't know, and we'll never know, what they truly think about Noah Cameron as a prospect. We know they liked Cole Reagans. They obviously identified him and went and traded for him. What do they internally actually think about Noah Cameron is probably the best thing to know that we'll never know on that. Because if they look, if you don't think, if you got to trust it, like if you don't think he's going to do this forever or some version of this, there's never a better time to trade him. Right. Like, and if you're wrong, you're going to have to live with that and watch him pitch and be good for a long time. But as long as you make a good trade, you can do it without a lot of regret. They're not going to do it for a rental, but if you trade him, he's awesome, and you get another piece that's pretty good, and then that's probably okay still.
Yeah, the Royals absolutely had to have the game last night to salvage that series against the Reds. It was a good offensive night for Jonathan India. He was able to get a couple of hits, and Bobby Witt Jr. added a hit. Vinny and Salvi went 0-for, both of them, in that finale last night, but the Royals hung on with a lineup that, you know, I think that we all kind of know, outside of the top guys, really isn't producing at a high level, but they had to have it. It does not get any easier for the Royals after the day off today. Back at home this weekend, a three-game set against the best team in the American League, in the Detroit Tigers, coming to town, but the Royals stay three games over 500. They're seven games back of the Tigers. They can make some big noise if they produce this weekend against the Tigers. They can get themselves right back into this thing this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you have a good series there and things are different. The thing is, though, the Tigers just keep winning. Like, they're not pretenders. They just keep winning. You're going to have to outpitch them, and you're going up against Skubal. And I mean, that's just the way it is. You're going to have to. I'm worried about the bullpen. Let me just say that right now. Predicted before the series, I'm worried about the bullpen for the Royals a little bit right now. They've got to get that settled out, massaged out. This was the great fear with all the low scoring games, right? And the starting pitching maybe holds up, but there's no way the bullpen's locking everybody up every game and holding them scoreless for four innings. And we're starting to see that a little bit. Team like Detroit, that's what worries me probably as much as anything else in this series, is that it's going to be hard to hold that offense down right now when you're not getting anything on the other side.
Yeah, that series kicks off tomorrow after the off day today for the Royals. You and I will break down the Tigers series tomorrow here on the program. Appreciate you hopping in. I know you've got to go. Yep. I know you've got, you know, your other life that you got to deal with, but appreciate you joining us from the hotel room. Enjoy that Texas-sized waffle.
Yeah, I'll get over there and take down as much as I can.
All right. In our next hour, Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, will be joining us here on the program. And Max, you and I talked about it just for a moment during the break. I had the opportunity to co-host the Pledge Drive on PBS Kansas last night.
Nice.
Which was fun. I mean, I'm not a TV guy, so I had to get dressed up. You know, I had to make sure that I, you know, looked okay.
Wear a tie.
I didn't wear a tie, but I wore the blazer.
Nice.
Had the blazer, had the button down, talked about the benefits of public broadcasting asked for folks to call in and make their pledge. It was a little bit of a late night, a little bit later for me than, you know, typically what I expect, but it was fun. Had a good time doing it, and their pledge drive continues. We're here at Odyssey. We're a supporter of PBS Kansas. We help promote some of their initiatives, and so it was a good time to be able to go and do that.
Yeah, it's pledge time for PBS.
It is pledge time. With the, you know, they ask the folks to open up their checkbook and help support public broadcasting. So it was a good time to do that. The only mistake that I made was that yesterday afternoon, I went to the Windsurge game, and it was a beautiful day. And we had rain last night, basically all throughout the night. But yesterday, for a day baseball game, it was really nice outside. Wasn't too hot. It was like the sun.
Yeah, the afternoon it got
a little warm in the afternoon, but the sun kind of came out. It was really nice, and I didn't even think about it until I got back that I got a little bit of sun. I didn't get a full fledged sunburn, but I got a little bit of sun.
A little bit of red.
I got a little bit of redness, and I came back to the office. I went into the bathroom.
Pasty that he is.
I saw myself in the mirror, and I was like, okay, well, I got to go on TV tonight on PBS. That's going to look great under the hot lights in the TV studio. So it's kind of bad when it's like 65 degrees outside. The sun is barely peeking out from the clouds, and I basically sunburned. Yeah. So that's the way that it went down. But it was a good day for baseball. The weather was beautiful outside. The Windsurge lost to the Drillers in extra innings, but it was an entertaining game at the ballpark. And their series continues, by the way, at Equity Bank Park this weekend, kind of in conjunction with the opening weekend of Wichita River Festival. So it's going to be a busy weekend here in Wichita. Speaking of baseball, we talked Royals in the last segment with Jacob Albrecht. Some big-time news with the potential new stadium for the Kansas City Royals. This kind of came down yesterday afternoon and got a lot of attention. And I'm wondering where, you know, what the actual next steps are with this, because it could be a pretty big development for the Royals. They tweeted out a statement yesterday basically saying that an affiliate of the club, I don't really know what that means, but an affiliate of the Royals purchased the mortgage on the former Sprint campus in Overland Park. That had been an area that, I mean, a few weeks ago had been discussed quite a bit. And there had been a lot of speculation that that could be a potential site that the Royals would be looking at to potentially build a new ballpark in that area on the Kansas side. And that was quickly shut down. I believe, if memory serves, the Royals at the time shut that down and said that they, you know, continue to be exploring multiple different options and nothing concrete as of yet. And then the folks that were actually officing in that area got a note from the property manager, I believe, saying that there was no truth to that deal and all of that. Well, apparently there was some truth to that deal, as the mortgage, the loan on that campus, which is now called the Asperia campus, the former Sprint campus in Overland Park, purchased the mortgage, and it was, I guess, an affiliate of the Royals. And I don't know what that means. I don't know an affiliate of the Royals, Max. I mean, I'm guessing that means maybe like somebody that's got money that is not part of the Royals organization, but maybe has some kind of connection with the Royals, apparently bought the loan on that campus. So knowing that, and knowing that if this person had no connection to the Royals whatsoever, then there would be no need to put out a statement about this. But considering that this person that bought the loan on the campus is affiliated with the organization in some capacity, and we don't know who that person is at this point, that tells me that there's legitimacy to this, that the Royals are potentially pursuing this as a location for a new ballpark.
Is there a sponsor on that stadium?
As of right now, not that I know of. I'm sure that they would be working on that. I'm sure that would be something that
Kauffman's
they would want.
Kauffman's not sponsored by anybody. There's no...
No. It's just Kauffman Stadium. And I mean, they've got tons of corporate sponsors throughout the ballpark, but the naming rights, no. It's Kauffman Stadium. I would imagine that would be a major, major focus of whatever this new stadium would be for the Royals, would be some kind of naming rights. It's interesting to me because there have been so many different potential locations on the Kansas side that have been floated, you know, whether we're talking about the Legends area or, you know, this potential location in Overland Park. I'm telling you, Max, as everything continues to move forward and the dominoes start to fall into place, it's hard for me to envision a scenario where the Royals stay in Missouri. I mean, I think they're coming to Kansas, like, especially with something like this. You don't have an affiliate of the team purchase the loan on this campus in this location unless you are serious about making this your location for a future ballpark. I just don't think that that's legitimate.
Unless they're bluffing and
trying to get
more money out of Missouri.
But why then buy the loan? And I know it's not the Royals doing it. I know it's somebody affiliated with them, not actually with the organization. But unless that independent person sees value in that campus outside of it potentially being, like, I guess I could see this scenario. Whoever this person is, or this organization, this group, whatever it is, that purchased the loan, maybe they thought, hey, this would be a great location for a stadium for the Royals. But if that doesn't happen, I can still make money. I can still make money with this location by doing something else. So one way or another, I stand to profit by purchasing the loan on this campus. I guess that could be a legitimate scenario. Maybe.
So you get leverage, just to, you know, if they're going to get money out of Missouri, but I don't think people want to have that on their tax bill.
I mean, absolutely.
People don't want to pay for stadiums anymore.
Absolutely. And I think the fact that, you know, the Missouri lawmakers have been unable to make anything like that happen, they've been unable to get anything passed. I read the other day that the Missouri governor is advocating for a special session to have lawmakers come back just for that sole purpose, to try to figure out what to do with the Royals and the Chiefs. I mean, clearly the lawmakers in Missouri are flailing. Clearly, they are trying to desperately figure out some way, in some form, to keep the Royals, at least, and the Chiefs, for that matter, in the state of Missouri. But this development from yesterday, I think, is extremely telling.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw that come down, and knowing, by the way, that this came from the official communications from the team, and it wasn't just like a reporter reporting it, or there, you know, there had been a source that was talking about it. Like, this came from the official, it came from Sam Mellinger, who's the vice president of communications for the Royals. And let me read a little bit of this statement that came out from the Royals. And this is the quote, the statement from yesterday. They say, the Kansas City Royals continue to explore all options throughout our community to develop a new stadium for the team. We have not yet decided on a site, and any assertion to the contrary is inaccurate. As part of our ongoing efforts, we have negotiated with or made investments in multiple potential sites, both in Missouri and in Kansas. One of these investments was the acquisition by an affiliate of the Royals of the mortgage on the Asperia campus through an arm's length bidding process. Okay, so they're saying that they have either negotiated or made investments in a lot of different areas. Like, they're scattering their chips out far and wide to try to figure out where that location is going to be. But I can't imagine, and maybe I'm wrong here, maybe somebody has more information than I do, but I can't imagine that any potential site has gotten the kind of investment that it looks like this particular location has gotten thus far. Maybe they've had discussions and negotiations with multiple areas. I have a hard time thinking that a loan has been purchased for one location by an affiliate of the organization. I just don't think that has happened so far.
Who's the broadcast? Who's the communications that carries all the games? You think that could be the affiliate?
I mean, I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, I would imagine that it's got to be somebody that has
some
money.
Some connection.
You know, and it could potentially be somebody that has a connection with John Sherman. Yeah. I mean, it could be, and this is total speculation, I have no idea, it could be a separate shell company that John Sherman himself has set up that went out and bought the mortgage on this location. So it's not the Royals that did it, but it's another entity that John Sherman controls. When they say, quote, an affiliate of the Royals, that could mean anything. That could be, you would literally just need one step of separation away from the Royals to make it an affiliate of the team. And the fact that they put in this statement that it was an arm's length bidding process means that they were not directly negotiating with this group to buy the mortgage on this, it means that they were not directly involved in the deal.
But they were in the loop.
But they were in the loop. Yeah. And it could absolutely, like, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, that it was a separate entity that John Sherman controls. And he hired somebody that is not an employee of the team, not an employee of the franchise, and hired this person just to go and negotiate. And so technically this person wouldn't be an employee of the Royals. And at that point, the Royals could be kept at an arm's length, quote unquote. I think where there's smoke, there's fire. I think you can read between the lines on all of this. And to me, I'm not a smart man. I don't know the way that a lot of this stuff works. I'm not involved in real estate negotiations. I don't know what it takes to buy a mortgage on the former Sprint campus in Overland Park. I'm just telling you, if I read between the lines, if I kind of try to deduce and figure out what the intent behind this is, to me, this screams the Royals are coming to Overland Park. That's what it means to me.
Is that tax-wise a better situation to come here? Or?
100%. I mean, with the star bonds that Kansas has in place to where it doesn't go directly burdening the taxpayers in the state of Kansas. It's all the sales tax that's generated from that area. I mean, knowing that Kansas has the mechanism to make something like this happen and to bring the Royals to the state, and Missouri doesn't, and the taxpayers have shown that they're not going to pay for it, and the lawmakers in Missouri have shown that they don't have an appetite for it, it's going to be Kansas. And with this acquisition yesterday, I'm telling you, it's going to be Overland Park.
Maybe Missouri figures we get the Blues and the Cardinals.
I mean, yeah, at that point, like, Missouri is already well-versed in losing teams.
They
lost the Rams.
They paid for that Cardinal Stadium, didn't they?
They did.
That's why the Chargers are now in Los Angeles, because San Diego built Petco, and they said, we're not building another stadium.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think the Cardinals, out of all the teams in the state of Missouri, they've got to be the most secure. I mean, they're not going anywhere.
No.
They're staying in that state. And that could very well be, you know, the state of Missouri, they could think, hey, we're good with that. Like, we don't want to lose you, Royals. We don't want to lose you, Chiefs, but we can't compete with what Kansas is doing. This is a pretty, in my mind, a pretty monumental development that you could call it an affiliate of the club. And I think the club knows exactly what they're doing. And my gut tells me we're going to see the Overland Park Royals in just a few years from now. A very interesting development in the stadium saga up there in Kansas City. That's going to wrap up our first hour here in Sports Daily. Hour number two is on the way on the other side. It's Tommy Caster, Max Power producing. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Hour number two underway here on Sports Daily. Tommy Caster, Max Power producing the program here on this rainy Thursday morning in Wichita. The KFH hotline is open at 869-1240. You can join the show that way. You can also leave your comments on our video stream. You can do that on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. We're also simulcasting on the 12 News Connected app. You can leave your comments there on the screen. We'll get to them as the show goes on. You can also leave us your voice messages on the free Odyssey app. Click the microphone button, leave your message, and we'll get to that as the show rolls on today. Our big thanks to Crestview Country Club, a proud supporter of the program. We love being partnered with Crestview. And, you know, there's been quite a bit of rain over the last few days. Not great golfing weather. Yesterday would have been a good day to golf, at least earlier in the day. But other than that, it's been a lot of rain. So I know they're getting ready for the Wichita Open in just a couple of weeks, and the course should be greened up and in great shape in time for that. We're setting up for a beautiful weekend, by the way, here in Wichita, which it's been a while since we've had that. It's been kind of a wet and rainy week. We've needed the rain here in this area, but it should be a really great weekend to kick off Wichita River Festival. The parade is tomorrow night. I will be judging the parade in downtown Wichita. KFH and all of our Odyssey stations will be a part of that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm certified to be
a
parade float judger. Nice. So I'll be doing that tomorrow.
In my younger days, I was a tan line judge.
I'm sure you were.
Are you going to see Everclear? Everclear is playing.
They're kicking off. Yeah, they're kicking off Riverfest. They've got the first night, and then Flow Rida. Are you a Flow Rida fan, Max?
God, no.
He will be performing on Saturday.
Oh, that's
night.
A he? I thought it was a she.
No, it's a he. Yeah. Yeah, you need to.
I don't pay attention to no talent.
You got to jump into today's pop music.
No, God no.
And then that way you'll know Flo Rida. It's going to be a fun weekend and a fun week ahead for the River Festival. And it always seems like, you know, of course, it's kind of the kickoff to summertime in Wichita. But there will probably be a couple of days of rain because usually that happens with River Fest. Fingers crossed it doesn't, but usually there's at least a little bit of rain. But by and large, it should be a really beautiful weekend and week here in Wichita as we kick off River Festival tomorrow here in town. So we got to talk about this briefly, Max, because I know you are our NHL expert. The Florida Panthers return to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, Hurricanes wasted their time winning a game.
Third year in a row, right, for the Panthers in the Stanley Cup Finals? They won last year so they could repeat. I mean, we talk all the time, at least in the context of the NBA, about dynasties and how there hasn't been a dynasty in the NBA since the Warriors 10 years ago, whenever that was. From an NHL perspective, I mean, the Panthers are doing as close to a dynasty as you can possibly get, right? I mean, 3 years in a row going to the Stanley Cup Finals, like that's Chiefs territory.
There's a team called Montreal that's the only NHL dynasty there is.
I mean, when was the last time you had a team
that repeated
number one?
Must have been Detroit.
That has been in the finals 3 years in a row. I can't imagine it's been all that recently, right? I mean, what the Panthers are doing probably hasn't been duplicated in a long time.
No, then they're loaded and they're scrappy. But if Edmonton gets there, that would be a 7-game Stanley Cup final.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I like Edmonton in that series.
Edmonton,
against them.
Do you really? So you would take Edmonton in the finals?
Because of Connor McDavid and Draisaitl.
I mean, with what the Panthers have done thus far, and I was reading about this, you know, before we came on, regardless if it's going to be Edmonton or Dallas, more than likely Edmonton at this point, Florida is going to start the series on the road. But they're great on the road.
Yeah.
Like, they've won a bunch of games in a row.
Florida, they don't care in the 3 years I've seen because they don't care where they play.
Yeah. Have they turned into, and I know we just talked dynasty with them a little bit, are they the villains of the NHL? Like, because I know a lot of people don't like them. A lot of people don't like the way that they play. You called them scrappy.
They are.
But a lot of people, I think they're easy from what I know, my limited knowledge. They're pretty easy to cheer against. They're pretty easy to boo. They're pretty easy to hate.
Yeah, that's because, and they added Brad Marchand. Yeah, they'll get under your skin. They're players that you hate, but you love if they play for you. Tkachuk and Bennett. Yeah.
Yeah. They're gritty. They're scrappy was the word that you used. Yeah. And they find their way to their third straight Stanley Cup Finals. They've got an opportunity to repeat. And I know you like Edmonton, and by all accounts, Edmonton will be in the finals. I can't imagine that Dallas can come back down, you know, can come back 3-1 down. I have a hard time believing that. So more than likely, we're going to see Edmonton and we're going to see Florida. I know you like Edmonton in the series. I just have a hard time thinking that Florida is going to give up that Stanley Cup.
Because of Connor McDavid and Draisaitl, those two. Yeah, I see Edmonton winning in seven for that. If it's Edmonton, Florida,
I think we're on a collision course to having what could be an epic series. Because I don't disagree with you as far as the number of games. I would not be surprised if it did go to seven. Because I do think both of these teams are relatively evenly matched. I think that with the experience that Florida has in this position, but then compare that to the talent, just the sheer talent of guys like Connor McDavid and others with Edmonton, I think it's going to be just an epic series. I wouldn't be shocked if it went to seven, but I can't. How can you bet against the defending champions? I don't think I can do that.
Yeah, it's just something. Canada's overdue. I said that about Toronto, but
yeah,
with McDavid and Draisaitl, they can carry him. They've carried him against. They were all played by Dallas, but
yeah,
they just. They couldn't get it by the goalie and McDavid and They just carried them. So
yeah, I mean we've but got.
I wouldn't be surprised if Florida won in seven either.
Totally, and we've got to get to the Stanley Cup Finals first. And Game Five of the series with Edmonton and Dallas is tonight. And you know it's so difficult to come back when you're down 3-1. I can't imagine Dallas will be able to do that. Maybe they can scratch out one more game, but
the hardest trophy to win. They play every other night.
That's a very good point. And you know I do think that we're going to be seeing obviously, Florida for sure, and then Edmonton in what could be a pretty epic Stanley Cup Finals. That's in on the headlines today. Obviously, back to the NBA. The Oklahoma City Thunder, they punched their ticket to the NBA Finals. The Pacers are knocking on the doorstep. They lead 3-1 against the Knicks. We could be, again, on pace for an NBA Finals with two teams that usually are not represented in the NBA Finals, with Oklahoma City and Indiana. Two smaller market teams, but two teams that they do it in a different way. It's not a super team. Oklahoma City built their roster from the ground up. They went through tons of really bad and lean years to get back to this point. And then Indiana, they did it the exact same way, and they've got really experienced coaching. I know it's a little bit presumptive to go ahead and say it's going to be Oklahoma City and Indiana in the finals. More than likely it will be. I'm really excited about this NBA Finals. And this is coming, by the way, from a guy. I'm a self-proclaimed NBA hater. I don't love the NBA. I don't follow it religiously until playoff time, and I'll start to dabble in it more and more and more. I got to tell you, if it ends up being OKC in Indiana, I'm going to be locked in. I'm really excited about this potential NBA Finals matchup.
You could travel either way to see a game.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to drive to Indiana, but I could maybe go to Oklahoma City. You know, it's because of the way that these two teams are made up, and because of the players, the talent,
and go, let's go play here.
Right. 100%. Like, that gets me excited about the potential of this series. Nothing against the New York Knicks. They've been a fun story. I know you don't like the Knicks.
I don't like anything from New York.
I know you're a Boston guy. I know you don't like the Knicks at all, but you know, that's been a fun story because it had been so long since they'd even gotten to this point. Been a nice story to see what they've been able to do. They've been outmatched by Indiana. I think Indiana will put them away in game five tonight. They did have a good run.
They came back from 20 twice against the Celtics, and they came back from 20 against Indiana in game three.
Yeah. I mean, look, like I think with the guys on that roster, including obviously Jalen Brunson and others, like they could be a player in the years to come. I do think that they could be. It's not going to happen this year. I think Indiana will obviously, in my opinion, get it done. I don't think there's any way the Knicks are able to come back down, you know, from 3-1. And so again, on a collision course, Thunder and Pacers in the NBA Finals. I'm excited for it. If that ends up being the matchup, and for somebody again that doesn't get locked into the NBA, I will absolutely be locked into a Thunder Pacers NBA Finals. I love Rick Carlisle. I think he's a wonderful coach, and watching him potentially game plan and scheme up against what the Thunder want to do, I mean, it could be a coaching masterclass.
I go back so far, I remember when Rick Carlisle had hair.
It's been a while since he's had hair, right?
Yeah.
He's a great coach, and he's one of the longer tenured coaches in the NBA. That's going to be a lot of fun, assuming that Indiana can get it done tonight.
And if it ends tonight, it doesn't start till the 5th of June.
Yeah, we've got a ways to go. We can speculate about what will happen in the finals once Indiana closes it out. That game five is tonight against the Knicks. We're going to step aside for a timeout. On the other side, we'll continue with Sports Daily. Don't forget Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, going to be joining us a little bit later on this hour, so stick around. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
A big thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee, being a proud supporter of Sports Daily, keeping us caffeinated and fueled up here each and every morning on Sports Daily. Max, you and I were talking about this during the break. So in the last segment, I mentioned that we're kicking off Wichita River Festival tomorrow. Got the Sundown Parade. I will be judging the parade. You wanted to know what the criteria was to be judging.
How does one judge these floats?
That's a great question. It takes a very specific kind of skill to be able to judge a float. I did it last year, so I'm trying to remember what all the different criteria was. I want to say it was like creativeness in the float. Some of it was like the performance, because, you know, some people just walk and they wave, right? Like, very simple. They walk and they wave. Other people have like dance routines that they do, or they're acting out something on their float. So like, you have to judge that as well.
You're going to be moving up. You'll be doing the Macy's parade and then the Rose Bowl parade.
You know what? Like, that's my goal. That's
we'll
my
know him.
Yeah, I'm trying to climb that ladder.
It's Tommy Caster.
I'm trying to climb that ladder of parade judges. Apparently, there's a whole parade judging circuit out
there, right?
That I'm trying to get onto. No, I don't even know if that's the truth or not. But there are a lot of really creative floats, and there are organizations all around the city that spend so much time in putting together their Riverfest float. And I am not – I don't know about you. I am not crafty, like, whatsoever.
No.
I'm not good at arts and crafts. I'm not good at building things. I'm not good at drawing things. Like, that is not a strong suit of mine. So why I am qualified to judge other people's ability at that, I have no idea. But that's what I'll be doing tomorrow night. I'm not good at that sort of thing at all. If you asked me to, like, hey, let's put together a float, I would not. I would be no help.
You'd take a scoop of ice cream and throw it in some root beer.
That kind of float. That kind of float I'm a big fan of. Here's a quick story on a side note about how terrible I am at anything arts and crafts. Anything art related at all. So a couple of weeks ago, my 4-year-old, we had an event at his preschool where the parents got to go to the preschool. They got to hang out with the kids on the playground, and the kids were playing on the playground, and the kids got popsicles, and they had all these fun games, and the parents got to hang out. So they had sidewalk chalk there. And my son came up to me and he was like, you know, Daddy, like, let's do sidewalk chalk together. I'm like, okay, that sounds great. So we grab the sidewalk chalk. And he goes, Daddy, I want you to draw me a bulldozer in sidewalk chalk. And the first thought in my mind was, I have no idea how the hell to draw a bulldozer with sidewalk chalk. So, you know, I do my best. I try to draw a bulldozer. And that kid, my son, is so mad at me. He's like, Daddy, that is not a bulldozer. What are you doing? And I'm like, buddy, I did the best I could. Yeah. I have no idea what I'm doing.
He sees you as a cartoonist that you're not.
It looked like a covered wagon. My bulldozer looked like a covered wagon. I am not artistic whatsoever. And my 4-year-old called me out on it. He was like, Daddy, that. So he went and he got my wife. So my wife, who is much more artsy than I am, goes and actually draws a bulldozer in sidewalk chalk. And he was very happy about that. Mm. So, but long story short, I'm judging the River Festival parade tomorrow night. So hope to see a lot of people down there for River Festival. I saw the forecast. It's supposed to be gorgeous tomorrow night. We get all the rain out of the way just in time for the opening weekend of River Fest. You've got the Sundown Parade. You've got the opening night concert. And then I forgot to mention entirely the fireworks spectacular tomorrow night. The cool thing about that is that all you have to do is turn on our sister station, 103.7 KYN, tomorrow night. And we are simulcasting the music from the fireworks. So if you're in your car and you want to watch the fireworks, all you have to do is have KUYN on. You'll be able to hear the music as it is synchronized up with the fireworks. And that's a lot of fun. We've done that for a number of years now, and we're excited to continue that on. So a really fun weekend in store for Wichita with great weather with the River Festival. So really looking forward to all of that. All right, in our very next segment, just a quick programming note, Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com. will be joining us. A lot to get to with Fitz. We'll talk about PJ Haggerty and how he is now a member of the Wildcats and what that looks like for Jerome Tang and his squad. Definitely fills a scoring need for the Wildcats. We'll talk to him about that in our next segment. Also, all of the drama, all of the news about the college football playoff and the SEC and what they want and everything that's going to happen there. We'll get into that with Fitz in the next segment as well. I don't know, Max, if you have been following much of that. Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, has basically solidified himself as public enemy number one. Like, and that, you know what, his job is to represent the interest of the SEC. And he basically, I mean, he's doing that. Number one, he is fulfilling his job responsibilities without a doubt. But in doing so, I mean, he is not making any friends outside of the conference. He's been very open and very public about, you know, how the SEC should be treated in the college football playoff, the new format and the new seating and the expansion in a couple of years and what that's going to look like. One of the quotes, and I'm going to get Fitz's take on this in our next segment. One of his quotes, I mean, he said the quiet part out loud the other day. He flat out said that he's got people in his ear that are affiliated with the SEC who are asking him, why are we even part of the NCAA? And I know that a lot of this is leverage. I know that a lot of this is positioning.
Well, where can they go?
Well, they could just do their own thing. You know, they could break away entirely from the NCAA, maybe with the Big Ten. I think that's a mistake. Jacob and I talked about that, I believe, on yesterday's show, how big of a mistake that would be for the game as a whole, for the popularity of college football as a whole across the country, if you regionalize it. But man, the fact that Greg Sankey is saying the quiet part out loud and is on record publicly saying, I've got people that want to know why we're even still in the NCAA. I know a lot of it is just him being brash, and I don't think it's actually going to happen.
That's like a state seceding from the union.
I mean, look, he's got
money loss, and they how would they support it?
I'll be the first to say I don't like the SEC. I don't particularly care for Greg Sankey, but I've got to give him, I guess, a little bit of credit. He's got some big old stones to be able to publicly and loudly say, I've got people in my ear that want to know why we are even part of the NCAA. He doesn't feel like the SEC is being treated fairly, even though, hint, hint, they're getting more than any other conferences in this new seating. They're getting preferential treatment left and right. He's going to continue to fight for everything, to basically have the SEC get everything that they could absolutely ever want.
Well,
I mean, that's what he's doing, right? I mean,
so you got the Big Ten. The Big Ten will want theirs, the Pac-12 or however many you're in.
The Pac-2.
Yeah. I mean, changed so much, I can't even keep track of who's in what anymore.
Is there a scenario, is there a world in which the SEC and the Big Ten together decide that, you know what, we're done with this. We can self-govern ourselves. We can do our own national, quote-unquote, championship or regional championship, or it's, you know, the champion of the SEC versus the champion of the Big Ten, and then we'll crown our own champion every single year. Could they do that? Absolutely they could.
So that'd be Alabama, Ohio State. They got
every year.
They have to get Notre Dame right in there somehow.
Yeah, like every year that would names. Just be probably the matchup.
Penn State.
Georgia would probably get in there, and you know, Michigan,
Miami.
Depending on, yeah. Look, do they have the resources to pull something like that off? 100% they do. It is not for a lack of resources that they don't do this. It is simply for the preservation of a national model of college football. That's why they don't pull the trigger at this. That's the nuclear option. This is not unlike a president of the United States threatening nukes, right? Like, don't make me push that button. This is the SEC throwing their weight around. What I think is interesting, by the way, is that Greg Sankey and the SEC have been the vocal proponents of this sort of thing. Like, they are the ones that are giving the interviews and saying things like this. I guarantee you the Big Ten feels the exact same way, because they've got power too. They've got probably just as much power as the SEC does, maybe slightly less, but it's the two of them and then everybody else. But they're not the ones on record. They're not the ones publicly saying that. I think that's really smart of the Big Ten. Let the SEC be the villain. Let them be the ones that are making all the waves and making all the noise. And then the Big Ten can be the beneficiaries of a new format in the college football playoffs.
But with the NIL and all the money the kids want, it could collapse itself if they leave it all, because you're paying kids $10 million to go to college.
I don't disagree with the sentiment of Greg Sankey saying, why are we part of the NCAA? What does the NCAA even do for us? Like, they're our governing body. They enforce things. But I'm not a fan of the NCAA. I think the NCAA, and I've been on record saying this, I think they are irrelevant. I think they are ineffective. I think they are antiquated. I think that the only thing they do a good job at is lobbying politicians and digging their heels into the ground. Like, I think that's the only things that the NCAA is good at are those things. So even though I don't like the SEC and I don't like Greg Sankey, I don't disagree with that sentiment. What does the NCAA do for us? Why should we even be a part of this entity anymore? And do they have the wherewithal and the resources to be able to do their own thing? Absolutely they do. The SEC is not short on money. They have the resources to do it.
They get all the major colleges to the NCAA.
I mean, maybe. But I'm sure that the SEC is thinking, man, we don't even need the Big 12. We don't even need the ACC. We don't need any of the schools on the West Coast outside of the ones that are in the Big Ten. We need us and we need the Big Ten. We can go out there and we've got the largest, most popular, for the most part, college football programs in America. So we can go out there and we can do our own thing. And sure, from a logistical standpoint, they can absolutely get it done. From a money standpoint, a resources standpoint, they can absolutely get it done. On top of that, I promise you, and I said this the other day, I promise you that the networks, whether we're talking ESPN, Fox, there might be other players in there, streaming services, Netflix is getting in to football, Prime Video, yeah. All these different streaming services are doing it now. I guarantee you that, let's just say hypothetically, there was an SEC versus Big Ten championship game every single year, and they were completely separate from the NCAA, completely separate from the CFP. There would be a network that would pick that up would pay a tremendous amount of money for that. So all of these things are true. All of these things are accurate that Greg Sankey is saying. It's simply the preservation of the national model of college football that's at stake here. Do I think that he is serious in these threats? Probably not. I think he's leveraging. I think he's negotiating. I think he's trying to get the absolute best position possible for the SEC. But the thing about it is that he's a fairly savvy negotiator. He knows that he's got the power. He knows that they're the top dog. And he knows that, honestly, and I hate to say this, but it's the truth, the NCAA, the other conferences, and the CFP, they need the SEC and the Big Ten more than the SEC and the Big Ten need them.
Yeah.
I hate that. I hate that that's the reality. That's the truth. That's the truth. And so Greg Sankey is positioning and lobbying for the best position possible for his conference and then for the Big Ten after that. I just think it's really interesting that he is publicly saying, and he said it in an interview yesterday, that he's got people in his ear wanting to know why they're even part of the NCAA. The solution to this? Well, first off, I think that the new model of seeding for the college football playoff, that should solidify things, at least for the time being. But I promise you one thing, this is not going to stop.
No, there's always going to be some school
or conference
that has a lot of wins and is going to not be part of the 16 team.
You know, right now it's the straight seeding where you've got the SEC and the Big Ten, and they're going to get more automatic qualifiers than the other conferences. That's all well and good, and that's what we're probably headed towards. That's where we're going. But what happens in 2 or 3 years when the SEC and the Big Ten say, you know what, rather than us getting 4 automatic qualifiers, I think we need 6 automatic qualifiers apiece. And then we're doing this again. And then a couple of years after that, you know what? We feel like we need 8 automatic qualifiers apiece. And then, you know what? From there, we just need the entire CFP. Like, let's shut out the Big Ten. Let's shut out the ACC. Let's shut out the Mountain West. And, like, I don't think...
They want to go to March Madness and have 64 playoff teams.
I mean, I think that that's... And I don't know how you prevent that from happening. Because you've got the power in these two conferences, and they can sort of throw their weight around and dictate what they want to do. And the alternative, if the NCAA, if the CFP, and if the other conferences don't acquiesce to their demands, then they could absolutely leave. They could walk away, and they have the resources to do it. They could put it together, and there would be a network to follow them. And what you're looking at then is you're looking at the dismantling of college football nationally. You would have a ton of people regionally in the southeastern part of the country and in Texas and in Oklahoma that would be way into college football. You would have the Big Ten way into college football. And then you would have everybody else. And I'm not saying that schools like Kansas State or Kansas or others wouldn't be popular. I think they absolutely would regionally. But there would be no national attention on the Big 12 schools, on the ACC schools. And with that, you get less money in network rights deals. You get less money in donations, less NIL. You don't get the top players anymore. You're not even able to compete with the SEC and the Big Ten with players because they're all going to go there.
Schools can anyway. You don't see Rutgers, you know, Syracuse and those schools back east buying for the top.
And so... Again, I don't know what the long-term solution is to keep this sort of thing from happening. You've got the SEC and the Big Ten. They know they've got the power. They know they're the big dogs in the room, and they're going to fight for exactly what they want. And if they don't get what they want, Greg Sankey is on record as of yesterday saying, why are we even in the NCAA? Like, he's saying the quiet part out loud. Why are we even doing this? And if this sort of thing is not solidified, and if there isn't some kind of resolution that moves college athletics forward permanently to where the SEC and the Big Ten cannot try to change things a couple of years into it, we might be on the fast track of having more regionalized college football. I don't want that. I think anybody who likes the Big 12 would want that because you're going to get lower quality players. You're going to get lower quality coaches. You're going to get fewer eyeballs on your product. And then everybody's going to be paying attention to schools in the SEC and the Big Ten for, you know, the actual national champions. I think that all this is going to do, if Greg Sankey wants to throw his weight around and actually follow through, which I don't think he will, but if he actually follows through, then we're just going to see just a major segmentation of college football from a regional perspective. And that's not what we want to see.
Yeah, because you don't want to destroy the smaller schools or the lesser programs just to...
Now, an alternative could be that all the conferences come together and say, you know what, I think we're done with the NCAA. Like, let's all work together and try to figure out a more equitable solution that doesn't involve this governing body. Let's govern ourselves. Let's figure out a way to make this happen. I don't know. It's interesting. And when I saw...
Haven't they talked about a commissioner?
Yeah, they have. So we're a long ways away from this getting settled and done, and Greg Sankey is talking about why they're even in the NCAA.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily here on KFH. Tommy Caster, Max Power producing the program. It is time for our weekly chat with Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, talking all things K-State. Fitz, good morning, my friend. How are you?
I like that you have Max on video.
Well, I know.
I get to see what Max is like. Max,
the camera is not my friend.
He fought me the entire way. So it's been Max and I this morning. We've been going back and forth all morning long because Jacob is out. And I told him, I'm like, Max, if you're going to do the show with me, we've got to have you on camera. And he fought me tooth and nail, but we got it done.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. He's got a lot of damn hair, man.
He's got more hair than I do. And I'm like 40 years younger than him. So
that's ridiculous.
I know. It's unfortunate.
Hey, I got a good story for you real quick.
Yeah.
So we've had some, this is true, by the way, we've had some neighborhood squirrels that are beefing. So you go out at night, you can hear them, and it's a ruckus, and trees are shaking. My dog went out to pee and just brought in a dead squirrel.
Holy cow.
A fresh dead squirrel, too, if you want it. It's probably still good for the eating.
I was going to ask you how Daphne and Dude felt about the,
Granny,
the squirrel
clamp
fight.
It.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's wild. Well, you know, I guess one squirrel clearly won the fight last night.
Yes, yes.
Oh,
we
man.
We have a winner.
Let's talk about winning. Let's talk about winning a fight, though, in regards to K-State. They get P.J. Haggerty. That's wild. That was not on my radar at all. I don't know how quickly this came together for Kansas State. Do you have insight and background on how all this took place?
No, I don't as of now. I will because I'm fascinated by it because when we all saw the initial report from a website none of us had really heard of, we're kind of trained to assume it's fake. And I think the consensus among a lot of people was that there was no real contact. I seriously thought it was the Haggerty representatives trying to run up the price on NC State because everything indicated he was going to NC State. And then it didn't. And I think I was right. I think there was a leak to try to run up the price, and that was Auburn, which came in late but never came in. They made it very clear they're not pursuing him. In case it ended up with him, which is a great ad. Don't ask me the price because I've heard a number of different numbers, and this really helps the team, though. You know, we can argue if it's worth it or not, but it's look, that's just the realm we live in now. You're going to pay a lot of money for players.
Yeah, I don't mean this at all as a knock on K-State whatsoever because it's a wonderful addition for the Wildcats. But I can't imagine that for P.J. Haggerty that this offseason has gone the way that he wanted it to go, where his ultimate end goal was to end up at Kansas State. And again, not a knock on K-State at all.
No,
but the fact that, you know, and I had read reports that he was looking for $4 to $5 million in NIL money and didn't get it. Didn't get the draft feedback that he wanted and then ultimately ends up with Jerome Tang and the Wildcats. I can't imagine that was the strategy for him from day one when he entered the portal.
No. And you know, and we've got some mixed messages on whether or not what kind of money he got. I know it's been reported nationally that he got 2 to 2.5. I've been told that he was a little bit closer to 4 with all the incentives and everything, but you know, I've been on a journey with this whole NIL money thing. I remember being appalled by $400,000 for Nigel Pack. And then last year, $2 million for Coleman Hawkins. And now I've just kind of come to the point, like, well, if these guys or gals want to spend this kind of money, you know, it's not my money. It's not K-State's money. It's donor money. And if this is what they want to do with it, well, so be it. That's nothing we can control that this is they're choosing. So,
yeah.
Okay, if you want to pay $2.5 to $4 million for a player for probably 1 year, he's got 2 years of eligibility, but probably go to the NBA after the season. So be it. Do it. Go for it.
Well, and even not knowing the exact dollar amount, I mean, I think that generally speaking, this probably should tell us that Kansas State is in a pretty solid position with NIL money. I mean, being able to pay Haggerty what he wants, and he's not the only one, right? I mean, obviously, Kostic, the Serbian transfer coming in and getting money that way too. I mean, like to me, it would seem like the coffers have to be relatively full for Kansas State if they're able to give out the money that these guys are looking for.
You know, I'm glad you asked that question because that is a topic for a daily delivery video I need to do. It strikes me that there's a core group of wealthy donors and it's not very many, who are my age or around my age, either on either side.
So 29? Which,
yes, in their early 30s, that have a tie, that remember attended either as an adult or, you know, as a college student or as a child, which I was, the glory days of K-State basketball. They caught the very end of it. For 50 years, K-State basketball was, you know, just a national power. I mean, they were in Final Fours. Yeah. And then it just, you know, honestly, with the building of Brantwood Coliseum, it disappeared. It's something that my generation wants back. And apparently there's a group of people that are willing to put the money up to try to make it happen, to try to get K-State basketball back on the national scene, which is, as I said, where it was for 50 years. And then right as ESPN's showing up and the whole game changes in terms of how we view blue bloods of college basketball, they built Brandwood Coliseum and it all just kind of dissipates. And it's been really disappointing for the older generation.
From a basketball perspective, Fitz, we know Haggerty's scoring propensity. We know how successful he's been in getting points. And I know, you know, just that simply put is a huge benefit to Jerome Tang and to the Wildcats. How do you think his addition fits with the way this roster is shaping up?
Really good. They needed an alpha score, and he's clearly that. And that's what I've been telling people that have been, you know, unimpressed with some of the other transfer portal additions. And I don't mean that they're bad players. It's like you're not going to win in the Big 12 with those guys as your lead guy. And I've been telling them they have to get an alpha score, and now everyone is looking at the roster and the kind of players they brought in, position-wise, it's not great right now, but talent-wise, it's incredible. They still probably need a true point, and they probably still need a true big that can run. But with the addition of these veteran coaches that are coming onto the staff, I think we're going to see them get up and down the court, and B.J. Haggerty fits that to a T. He's absolutely perfect. If they're going to go fast, that's what he likes to do.
That's fascinating, and I can't wait to get more information as to how he ended up with the Wildcats. He's got such a big-time scoring ability, and that's a huge get for the Wildcats going into this season. With the time we've got left, Fitz, I want to chat with you about one of your favorite people on the planet, and that's Greg Sankey. And it's been an interesting couple of days talking about the world of college football, college athletics, the CFP changing the way that they're going to be doing seeding moving forward and all of that. What I thought, and this is kind of where I want to start, I thought it was wild in his interview, I believe it was yesterday, when he said the quiet part out loud, where he said he's got people in his ear asking why the SEC is even in the NCAA. And clearly these conversations have been going on for quite some time. But the fact that it's just out in the open now is crazy to me.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did. He said the quiet part out loud, because now the pushback, the firestorm he's facing is going to get ugly. And here's where I'm at right now. I think the ACC and Big 12, the commissioners need to go to the Big 10 and say, is this really what you want? You want to destroy college football? You want to be part of that? And try to peel the Big Ten off, because I get a sense this is mostly SEC driven. This is like the Big Ten's their friend. They're trying to talk them into jumping off the bridge with them.
Yeah.
And then call the bluff of the SEC and say, okay, go play your own games. It's going to be the Southeastern version of the Canadian Football League for most fans. If we're not in the southeastern part of the country, we're not going to watch this. If we're not a fan of one of your teams, we're not going to watch this. We don't have any association with this. None of our teams will ever play you. So I think this is I think we're coming to a very important moment in this discussion. And Greg Sankey is digging in. He's embraced being the villain. I've embraced him being the villain. And I think we're going to see some movement this summer on this, or at least it's going to be fiery all summer long, which is great because trying to do sports, college sports in the summer, you need realignment. You need people beefing. I'm going to have to cover squirrel fights here pretty soon if it calms down.
I do think, to your point, I mean, the Big Ten is the key chess piece in all of this because, you know, like if I'm Tony Petitti, I'm like, look, I'm going to let Greg Sankey be the bad guy in all of this, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut and let him take the bullets. And then, you know, depending on which deal is better or how where the chips end up falling, we'll go in whatever direction is going to be best for us. I think that's a really smart strategic move.
Yeah, and they are laying back right now. And, you know, at some point, I think a lot of fans have been displeased with, you know, ESPN as a TV entity and how they handle stuff. But this is going to come to a head. If ESPN's playing a role in destroying college football as we know it, there's going to be a backlash. And it's going to be I think they're totally underestimating what is going to happen if they try to make this move.
Well, yeah. And like, let's be really honest. And I mentioned this in our last segment when we were talking about this. You know, if the worst case scenario happens and the SEC and the Big Ten decide to break away, there would absolutely be a network, ESPN, Fox, maybe somebody else, that would pay money to televise an SEC Big Ten championship. Like that absolutely mm-hmm. would be the case. And both of those conferences have the financial resources to do something like this. But is it the right thing for the nationalization of college football? It absolutely is not.
No. And again, they would get pretty good ratings. They would get much better ratings than the Big 12 ACC championship.
Right.
If there was such a thing. But all the Big 12 ACC people, we would have no reason to watch those games.
Exactly.
And that's the calculation I think ESPN's completely missing here. They just think the viewership numbers are going to drag along, even if, you know, Kansas State and Kansas and anyone else will never have an opportunity to play a Southeastern Conference team, that will still watch those games. Because why? It's the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everyone wants to watch the SEC. It's just not true.
Yeah,
true at all.
You're totally right. It's going to be a wild summer, and we'll continue to follow it. Fitz, we're up against it. We appreciate your time, and go enjoy that dead squirrel carcass.
Yeah, I got that out of the house already. Max, great to see that head of hair.
Good to talk to you, Tim.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for a Thursday edition of Sports Daily. Appreciate Tim Fitzgerald joining us to talk PJ Haggerty, joining the Wildcats, and what could happen in the world of college football. If you missed any of that conversation, you can go back and listen to it anytime on the free Odyssey app. A normal day of programming on the network today, since the Royals have an off day. Rich Eisen follows us at 11, the Jim Rome Show at 2, JR Sport Brief at 5. Of course, we've got NBA Finals and NBA Playoffs, that is, with the Pacers a chance to go to the NBA Finals. We've got that tonight. We've also got NHL playoffs continuing tonight as well. Tomorrow on the program, Jacob is back. Jalen Thompson joins us to talk about the Royals series this weekend against the Tigers and a bunch more. We'll see you then.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.